DW.
I mean, it's a long and composite problem, but at the center of it, I think it's a question of both incentives and available funding. So the thing to know is that pensions in the DRC, according to the General Statute of 2016 that you cited, are calculated on the basis of the base salary. Now, the base salary is very low and compressed. So the differences are minimal between an office messenger and a director, typically around $125. And so both the end of career allowances and the pension payments should be calculated on that sum only. However, remunerations for many agents under the general statutes of our career civil servants depend also on salary supplements or bonuses known as prime. And these are not taken into consideration in the calculation of end of career allowances or pensions. So no one wants to retire if their pensions are inadequate, and continuing to work despite aging and tiredness is a more attractive option. So in these conditions, a phrase that you often hear in Congo when you speak to civil servants is that retirement equals death. So this on the one side is a problem of incentive. The other side as well is available funding to pay end of career allowances, because normally the government should allocate money for this, because they've created a National Civil Service Pension Fund since 2015, which is taxing already the salaries of existing civil servants to aliment the rolling fund they have. But for end of career allowances, the government has overwhelmingly depended on World Bank funding.
Have you personally spoken to people who are still on the job and say they can't afford to quit? What did they tell you about their circumstances?
Well, when speaking to various people about this, indeed, the narrative you hear is that they try and stay on as much as is possible or as is feasible. As you said, there's teachers who are above 80 who are still in their classrooms because of this situation.
Can they even physically still do their jobs? I mean, being on their feet all day long teaching, that must be very taxing.
Yes, I guess that's a big problem to take into consideration. It has adverse effects in terms of productivity, in terms of motivation, in terms of mobility, ability to adapt to new technologies, etc. But it's the only choice they have, basically. So for those who still have the strength to muster, they do so. Others are just at home, basically.
Keeping them on the payroll must also have negative effects on students then, I presume, because if they don't get the education they need, if the teachers can't do their jobs 100%, have you looked into that?
It's not exactly the focus of my research, the end point of actual public service provision. However, what I can tell you is that this creates a deep problem of resource allocation and distribution, not only in the education sector, but other sectors like the health sector as well. Because in the health sector, where we did quite a bit of work, a stark illustration of this is that you find older generations who are paid a state remuneration, but are not necessarily working because of their physical inability to do so, but that they still draw their salary. But at the same time, you have new recruits of new generations who are actually working without being paid by the state budget, without the salary, and who are remunerated on the user fees that patients pay. So on the one hand, you have people who are paid but are not working. On the other hand, newer generations who are working but are not paid. And of course, this creates very negative effects for public service provision and public administration generally.
What happens to young people who get hired? They don't get salaries?
Well, drawing on a salary is quite a complex procedure in the DRC, because in order to get a salary, you need a civil service registration number. Now, acquiring one may be an easy thing, but in order, once you have one, in order to be able to apply to the relevant institutions to be able to draw your salary, you need to start working somewhere. And for that, you need to go through a commission d'affectation, so a formal appointment process. Once you have that, even then, the Ministry of Civil Service is meant to send your name to the Ministry of Budget for inclusion in the wage payroll, the base salary payroll. But that can take from months to years, depending on the case. And what makes it dependent on is basically the connections you have. So it's a process which is based on negotiation, on using your network, sometimes financial payments, influence peddling, etc. And it's not a straightforward process by any means.
So does that mean you could be hired as a young person? You could get this registration number you need, but you wouldn't get any payment whatsoever for months or years on end?
That is indeed a possibility. So, for example, well, once you are starting to work somewhere, to get your base salary, you need the registration number and to be integrated in the payroll. However, you're also eligible to what I call bonuses or salary supplements. And for those, you do not necessarily need a registration number. However, these bonuses or salary supplements do not exist in all institutions. They exist in certain ministries, not in others. Some departments in particular ministries have them, others not. And typically they exist, they're more prevalent in the capital city, Kinshasa, than elsewhere in Congo. So for somebody who's newly recruited and lacks a salary because he's not registered yet, depending on where he is and what are his connections, he potentially could draw on these salary supplements. But others are just working without any of those. So I guess now you want to ask me why do they come to work or how they survive? Well, there's other opportunities for on-the-job payments, basically. Working on an administrative file, achieving a particular task, can get you what they call non-permanent salary supplements. And of course, if you are working in frontline services, so interface bureaucracies where you have contact with service users, there it's user fees or other privatization of your public duties that can yield you some kind of income from the job.
Surely that's not enough to sustain your living, is it?
No, but the alternative perhaps is to work in the informal sector or something even harsher. And the other thing to note is that if you are working as a civil servant, although moonlighting, so working elsewhere and having a separate business activity or a separate job, although this is forbidden by the general statute of the civil service, in practice it's largely tolerated. So being a civil servant, even drawing a civil service salary, does not preclude being a taxi driver or doing another occupation to complement your income. In fact, I've taken many taxis in Kinshasa where after discussing with the driver, he told me that he's a civil servant in such and such ministry, but because they're poorly paid, he rides a taxi on the side. DW.